You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, Scholasticide, bombing schools, libraries, and cultural centers, killing students and teachers. Sound like genocide? It is.
Hundreds of teachers and academics have been killed, including deans of universities and leading Palestinian scholars, obliterating the very prospects for the future education of Gaza's children and young people.
The destruction of Palestinian life in Gaza is articulated state policy.
At the end, they want to control you, control your future, control your development, control your progress, control your even aspirations.
When you're making it impossible to survive and you're wiping out their culture, their history, their libraries, their archives, that's what it is. This is why we're calling it genocide.
Once upon a time, there was a university in Gaza, and in practice, a school for murderers and human animals.
The identity of the group to which we belong does not diminish the human rights to which we are all entitled.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe at greenplanetmonitor.net. Want to destroy a people in whole or in part? In other words, commit genocide as genocide is defined under international law? You don't need gas chambers or firing squads and deep ditches. Just destroy their schools and universities, bomb their libraries, archives, cultural institutions, seize their historical records, make it as hard as possible for their kids to go to school. With more than 80% of schools in Gaza damaged or destroyed, a group of UN experts recently declared, it may be reasonable to ask if there is an intentional effort to comprehensively destroy the Palestinian education system, an action known as Scholasticide, the experts wrote. The GPM spoke with its lead author. We'll listen to her in a moment. First, listen to this. Two attorneys for the government of South Africa this past January, arguing South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, Thembeka Nkotobi, is a South African lawyer and legal scholar and a member of South Africa's Judicial Services Commission. Blin Nichrale is an Irish human rights and international law expert at Matrix Chambers in London.
Israeli soldier Yeshaya Shalev published a video against the backdrop of the ruins of what was the site of Al-Azhar University with the caption, "Once upon a time, there was a university in Gaza, and in practice, a school for murderers and human animals." Soldiers obviously believe that this language and their actions are acceptable because the destruction of Palestinian life in Gaza is articulated state policy. Senior political and military officials encouraged without censure the 95-year-old Israeli army reservist Ezra Yachin, a veteran of the Deir Yassin massacre against the Palestinians in 1948, to speak to the soldiers ahead of the ground invasion in Gaza. In his tour, he echoed the same sentiment while being driven around in an officially Israeli army vehicle dressed in Israeli army fatigue. I quote, "Be triumphant and finish them off, and don't leave anyone behind. Erase the memory of them. Erase them, their families, mothers, and children. These animals can no longer live. If you have an Arab neighbor, don't wait. Go to his home and shoot him. We want to invade, not like before. We want to enter and destroy what's in front of us and destroy houses, then destroy the one after it. With all of our forces, complete destruction, enter and destroy. As you can see, we will witness things we've never dreamed of. Let them drop bombs on them and erase them.
In the Qatar case, the court issued a provisional order where harm to approximately 150 students was an issue. In Gaza, 625,000 schoolchildren have not attended school for 3 months, with the United Nations Security Council expressing deep concern, I quote, that the disruption of access to education has a dramatic impact on children and that conflict has lifelong effects on their physical and mental health. Almost 90,000 Palestinian university students cannot attend a university in Gaza. Over 60% of schools, almost all universities, and countless bookshops and libraries have been damaged or destroyed, and hundreds of teachers and academics have been killed, including deans of universities and leading Palestinian scholars, obliterating the very prospects for the future education of Gaza's children and young people.
Thembeka Nkotobi is a South African lawyer and legal scholar and a member of South Africa's Judicial Services Commission. Blin Nihirale is an Irish human rights and international law expert at Matrix Chambers in London. You heard them here arguing South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague on January 11th, documenting Israeli scholasticide as a component of the self-declared Jewish state's broader genocidal praxis. Numbers speak louder than words. Since Israel's assault on Gaza began back on October 7th, at least 60% of the besieged enclave's educational facilities have been damaged or destroyed. Yisra University, the last remaining higher educational institution in Gaza, was demolished on January 17th. Today, over 600,000 Gazan students have no access to education or books. 13 Gaza public libraries are now in ruins. Some 200 heritage sites, 227 mosques, and 3 churches have also been damaged or destroyed. Among these, Gaza's 7th century Omari Mosque, a center of Islamic faith and learning, demolished in an Israeli airstrike back in December. A Hamas stronghold, the Israeli military said. Gaza's central archives, repository of 150 years of Palestinian history, is reportedly in ruins. Over the past 7 months, Israeli military forces have killed at least 5,500 students, 260 teachers, and 95 university professors. These figures were contained in an April 18th statement by 24 UN special rapporteurs and subject matter experts. The GPM reached out to the statement's lead author, Farida Shahid. On April 8th, the UN Human Rights Special Procedures issued your statement. You were joined by, about 24 other special rapporteurs and experts, entitled UN Experts Deeply Concerned Over Scholasticide in Gaza. And you write here, more than 80% of schools in Gaza damaged or destroyed. It may be reasonable to ask if there is an intentional effort to comprehensively destroy the Palestinian education system, an action known as scholasticide. Do you believe that Israel is intentionally seeking to comprehensively destroy the Palestinian education system, like in Gaza?
The evidence that we have would suggest that. At that point, there were 80% of the schools had been destroyed. It is now closer to 90%. And the destruction of schools were targeted as of October. And schools that were then used as shelters were also bombed. And not just once, several times. So it's like a complete destruction of the educational infrastructure. They have been thousands and thousands of children who've been killed. The last statement that we had was 13,500 children by May, that was April, by May, it had gone up to 15,000 plus, et cetera. By December, the UNICEF had confirmed there was absolutely no form of education or schooling in the Gaza Strip at all. That means 625,000 students were deprived of their right to education. And I think it's significant that even in November, the UN UNRWA Commissioner General said that he watched with sheer horror as schools that were run by the UN UNRWA were attacked multiple times, knowing that they were being used as shelters. So I think this is what has given rise to this term. Scholasticized was first actually coined by Professor Karma Nabulsi, who was an Oxford don, and she coined it in 2009. It was during the pattern of colonial attacks. And in 2009, she said, this is what it's like. It's a systematic destruction of Palestinian education by Israel to counter a tradition of Palestinian learning and the role and power of education in an occupied society, she emphasizes. The right to education mandate has long spoken about education in emergencies, any kind of emergencies, whether they're natural or man-made disasters and emergencies. The right to education is maintained according to international law. But international humanitarian law and international human rights law both say that the obligation to uphold these basic rights does not stop just because you are in an emergency. I can't get into the heads of people, but what I see as evidence on the ground certainly suggests this. There's a very systematic, and as I said, it's been going on since October, November. By December, no more schooling.
And every last university in Gaza, I gather, has been destroyed. Isra University, the last remaining university in Gaza, was demolished by the Israeli military on the 17th of January, 2024. So there are no more universities standing.
That's right. There's no more universities. And I think, yeah, apart from that, there's also all the heritage sites which have been destroyed. There's hundreds of mosques and some churches.
But let's get to that in a second. Let's return to that in a second. But this is astonishing that every last university has been demolished. 95 university professors have been killed. And I've been reading about all the various highly prestigious, I'm thinking about, you know, medical school professors. I mean, doctors is another thing, and physicians, but university professors killed. 95 university professors have been killed.
That's only the ones that we know about. Because remember, it's very difficult to get information and accurate information from Gaza when journalists have been targeted, when we are depending on people without electricity, unable to charge their machines and get us the information. So this is just the people who are confirmed and recorded dead. We don't know how many. They're also students as well as professors who've been jailed and picked up. So there's others, you know, there's other parts of that to the university professors.
And then, of course, secondary schools, elementary schools, buildings, school buildings.
Well, 90% of the school buildings are destroyed, even when they're being used as shelters. And currently you've seen that again happen, even when they're declared safe zones by the Israeli forces, they have been bombed. So there's no place that is safe. And the real trouble, I think, in many ways to me, this is really looking at it at the future. You know, sometimes it seems that education, when you're just trying to survive with all the other horrors, is not maybe so important, but you're looking at the future of an entire generation of children, of a people, that's the Palestinians. UNICEF has called this a war on children, and that's been endorsed by many others, that this is a graveyard of children now. And those who have survived are often not just traumatized. UNICEF estimates at least 1,000 children, if not more, have lost one or both their limbs, their walking limbs. I'm not sure about how many have lost other limbs. You're talking about a traumatized population. What that means in terms of future education gives you hope. Education is what allows you to identify yourself, to come together, social cohesion, etc. We've seen in the pandemic, for instance, we saw how schools in particular were not just a place of learning. They were a place of social cohesion, of people coming together, of getting assistance, etc. And I think when you destroy that entire infrastructure, it's very, very difficult. You know, you have more than 1.1 million, I think was the last count, of children who will need psychological assistance. They have been so traumatized. So, yeah.
And when you, I mean, when you demolish a housing block or a residential building, it's, of course, awful. You're destroying infrastructure, housing infrastructure, and you're killing people. But when you demolish a university, you're demolishing all kinds of specialized technical equipment. I'm thinking about science labs, and I'm thinking about computer equipment, and I'm thinking about libraries with books and volumes of research. So it's more than just destroying a building or a set of buildings. You're destroying all this educational infrastructure.
There's the infrastructure, and so you think about the children who, whenever the ceasefire hopefully will come about, how are they going to be educated? Who is going to educate them? And how are they going to be educated when they don't have the buildings, they don't have the materials, they don't have the equipment? As you said, they've lost many of their teachers. So when you have children as well as teachers and educators who are traumatized, who's going to deal with their trauma? Are they going to be able to overcome it? How are we ready as a community to be, as an international community, I'm talking here, of extending that assistance? You know, we had this stoppage of the support for UNRWA, which was one of the few UN agencies that was helping people. I think, you know, school, there was one of the special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, Francesca, finally managed, this was sometime around December or January, she managed to talk to some of the children. And what she shared, the story of this boy who told us that, you know, he had his school bag and every day he'd go there with all his books and he's very excited about it. And then he was suddenly told that that school bag had to contain his whole life because that's what he could take with him. And then he spoke about having to burn the two books that he had selected as his treasures because he had to feed it to the fire in order to survive. So the children think that we've all forgotten about them. So they were very happy just to talk. They were happy somebody was talking to them and at least listening to what they had to say. But as I said, I think education is what allows you, as well as the other social interactions, to create a sense of self. And then if you don't have the materials and equipment to create that sense of self, how do you progress? And you have also starvation. So starvation leads to stunting. Stunting leads to cognitive problems. You have a generation now that's been exposed to this, likely to be stunted, likely to have cognitive issues. So all of this is challenges. There are huge challenges here. So yes, that's why I use the term scholasticide, which includes all of this.
And you're also talking here about heritage sites.
Yes.
195 heritage sites, 227 mosques and three churches, including like this 10th or 9th century mosque at the Central Archives of Gaza, containing 150 years of history destroyed.
That's right. So when you have libraries and when you have archives which are completely destroyed, that creates a huge challenge. How are they going to get educated when the materials and their history is being destroyed? Which is why one feels that this is a very dangerous path, and it's one that is highly traumatic for the Palestinian people, but also the children in particular, because that is the future. And so we've had parents tell us about, you know, you read about a father who said, basically, our children are seeing things children should never see. And so he's not just talking about the death that is surrounding them. He's talking about having limbs amputated without anesthesia because the hospitals don't work. So it's something like maybe partly 10 hospitals, and you've just had another one bombed, so less than that hospitals are able to manage. You have decomposing bodies, which is what this father was talking about. You have children who are injured, and two fathers saying they were too scared to go to the hospital because it's being bombed, so they ended up stitching that boy themselves. He had fallen. Who knows if he survived, because they had no medical equipment to do that. They just did it because they were so afraid to go to Al-Shifa Hospital. So these are some of the traumas that you're talking about, which I think we will have to seriously think of how to address such an enormous challenge in the future. And you talked about homes being destroyed. So just to say that I think it's 70% of the domiciles have been shattered completely. And compare that to Ukraine, 10% of the buildings, residential buildings, have been destroyed in an entire year. And we're not a year into this war yet.
So when people, you know, you read about people who've lived in communities, well, the people whose houses have burned down, or communities where wildfires have swept through and they've lost their home, and they're reflecting on it like the home, they can build a new home, but their photo albums and their books that they inherited from their parents are all gone. And if they happen to find like an old photo album that's still intact, it's like they almost feel better. They do feel better. So this is what, you know, you're writing here, the foundations of Palestinian society are being reduced to rubble and their history is being erased. I mean, there's nothing more important for us human beings than our history.
No, there's not. I'm a fervent believer of that. But we connect with that history. It is how we see and perceive the world and are perceived by it. It's how we interact. It's very integral to our sense of collective being, identity. And I think this is something that is being destroyed here, and which is very, very worrying. As I said, I'm not sure. The whole world seems to continue to sleep as this devastation takes place. It's appalling.
It's interesting that Mexico has just filed an intervention at the International Court of Justice in South Africa's genocide case against Israel. Just the 24th of May, just the other day, it was filed and it's just been published. And Mexico is asking the ICJ to, it's putting forward its ideas regarding the construction, the proper construction of the Genocide Convention. In paragraphs 34 to 37, Mexico is proposing that the Genocide Convention be constructed in such a way as to acknowledge the destruction of cultural heritage as an act of genocide. This was very interesting coming from Mexico with such deep, deep, deep historical cultural heritage. And they think that the destruction of cultural heritage systematically should be fall under the definition of genocide.
Well, as the former Special Rapporteur on Cultural Rights, the first one, I would think that something that needs to seriously be thought about, because it is, as you said, you lose a home, one house, and your whole sense of self disappears. You're shattered.
I mean, you destroy a people to destroy a people in whole or in part. You don't need to exterminate them and kill them. You just need to wipe out their culture.
Well, I mean, when you're making it impossible to survive and you're wiping out their culture, their history, their libraries, their archives, that's what it is. This is why we're calling it genocide. And the ICJ has said that, yes, but of course, we're not listening. Israel is not listening to what the ICJ said either. They continue, despite the fact. I don't know why the ICJ didn't, in its first thing, call for an immediate ceasefire. We have been calling a special procedures for immediate ceasefire and permanent ceasefire since October, and then again in December. So the special procedures, you know, it's kind of the special procedure, all individuals, as I said, we're all very different and distinct, and we have our own distinct mandates. But it has been surprising how many. So I think there's more than 40 of the special procedures, the mandates, have come together around Gaza time and time again. We've been issuing one statement after the other. So it's the special rapporteur on food, the special rapporteur on health, the special rapporteur on poverty and displaced people, on freedom of expression, of violence against women and girls. I mean, it's endless, so I can't name all 40, but it is normally getting special procedures, mandate holders to come together. It's kind of like herding cats, but the emergency and the deep distress that everyone is feeling has really enabled us to come together. And we've been speaking to states as individuals, but also as groups sometimes, trying to shed the light on what's happening and asking for action to be taken by all the states.
What do you think academics, American, U.S., Canadian, European academics, university academics, and high school instructors, elementary school teachers, the teaching profession, what do you think their response should be to what's happening in Gaza, to what you refer to as the school asticide?
Well, I think we have to be aware that one of the key things that should happen in education as a whole is to have a human rights perspective and to have human rights education, which means tolerance, which means the right to education is the right to learn, and it's lifelong, but also to live together. And I think that's something that we have to encourage our students and our academics to ensure that we do not lose the space for diversity and for hearing the other people. Right now, I think there's such a sharp divide that people are not listening to each other. And I think I come from a country where conflict has been quite prominent for many years of our existence.
And that being which country?
Pakistan.
Pakistan, yes, yes.
So at one point I thought, you know, the thing is that you have to get the other side to see the humanity of the other person. And when you don't see that humanity, it's very simple to say, and it's extremely difficult to achieve. So when you have people in conflict who dehumanize the other person, it's very difficult to have a conversation. And I think that's what needs to happen. We are all part of humanity. We all have our differences. We have to be able to recognize that humanity and recognize that it's only by recognizing everyone's humanity that we can survive as a people.
But do you have any reflections on this situation where university students camping out peacefully on American campuses and Canadian campuses and European campuses are being forcibly removed, sometimes quite brutally, by police called in by university administrators in the context of what's going on in Gaza, the destruction of the university and the schooling sector, and university presidents are calling in the cops on students who are protesting about it?
Well, I interacted with 6-7 different universities when I was in the U.S., and my end of visit statement starts with precisely that. So it is of deep concern. And I know that the government, many of these universities are private universities. But as I told the officials, the police is still part of the state apparatus. And therefore, there has to be restraint on the part of the police. What is happening to students who are protesting is absolutely appalling. And it's not just students. It's students, professors, staff. And the treatment is very dissimilar. And it was underlined that those who are black or brown in color, depending on your ethnicity and background, are being treated very differently. So they're getting harsher punishments. They're not being, many students, foreign students, and even I think US students, are not being really able to graduate because they're not being allowed to sit for their final exams. So there are penalties like that. Many have been thrown out of hostels overnight. Many have lost their food allowances or whatever system that their university has. Some have been deported, and that's one part of it. So I've been appalled to listen to this, and we have asked the students to send me the information exactly what they are asking of their universities. The other thing I've found very surprising is how many universities actually have funding from the armament industry. So when students are asking to divest, one of the things that is being asked in Europe, as well as the U.S. and other in Canada, is to divest from the armaments. So this was something I had not realized.
Yeah, many of these universities have cooperative agreements with Israeli universities like Technion or like Hebrew University, or I mean, they're all the Israeli universities. They're all totally integrated into the military and